Hello, boxing fans around the world. Thank you for joining me once again here on Talk and Fight for another episode of Boxing News Today. And today I'm joined by a very special guest out of Florida, I believe, Brendan Epstein. Welcome, Brendan.
Thank you, brother. Very grateful to be here with you. And hopefully your viewers and listeners will enjoy this as much as we're going to enjoy having a conversation.
We certainly will. I mean, what was intriguing about the email I received from Ari was not that you'd done some work with Shane Mosley, a pretty famous boxer in his own right, but there were some things that I read there that I thought had application to the boxer in general, whether a young boxer, a veteran boxer, or amateur professional. There were some things that were being said there that triggered something in my mind that I wanted to ask in particular. But before we do that, before we get into the specifics that I have in mind with respect to what you've written about and what you're talking about, why don't you first of all give our fan base an overview, a quick little overview of yourself and, of course, the book that you've written. It's really cool.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm a mental performance coach. I've been doing this for around 15, 16 years. And like you said, specifically, I work with a lot of athletes. So I work with professional boxers, UFC fighters, Major League Baseball players, NFL players, really people spanning across professional sports, and also business owners, entrepreneurs, people of that sort as well. And really, I focus on high achievers who've ran into the governor. And we've all ran into the governor at some point in our lives where we're starting to try to strive for a higher level of success we've ever had before. And then it's just like this invisible ceiling that we come up against, all right? Or when you're driving a car, a governor is like, you can't go past 100 miles per hour. Right. And so why does that happen? It's because your subconscious is programmed to embody a certain identity. And so what I do is I help you break through those programs to reprogram yourself in a way that you can embody a greater identity. You can go past the governor and you can actually achieve more in your life. And so it's a little bit of magic when it comes down to the work that people are actually doing with me. But in the book, I kind of tell the story of how I learned these skills. I was a football player in college myself. So that's what sent me down this path of learning the mental game and how that applies to performance and sports and life in general. And in the book, I also have the playbook. And so, of course, a lot of what I do is the magic of the one-on-one container I create with my clients. But there is a method to the madness as well. And there's a roadmap that anyone can follow, no matter what you do, whatever you're striving for in life. Because the truth is, we're all programmed in a very similar way. We all received our programming in our early years between 0 and 7 years old. We've also received more programming through the most impactful emotional events in our life. And so now we're all kind of like solidified in a way. We have the scar tissue of this programming that basically has programmed us either to succeed in some areas and fail in others. And so the book will kind of show you as a mirror, okay, where am I struggling? So you can identify those mental blocks and break through them to hopefully achieve more of what you personally desire in your life. So that's what I do with the fighters, and that's what anyone can do for themselves.
And so here is my first point of connectivity, if you will. For many, many years now, I've been advising business professionals. What I do here on the boxing show, I do for fun. And a lot of the fellas who and gals who help out also do it for fun as well. But the point of the matter is I saw some similarities between when I'm talking to young entrepreneurs about starting new businesses and what is really required. And I saw the similarities between what is also required in a boxer. So that determination that you need to really get to the top, if you will, the courage that you need. To believe in yourself and to believe what you have is valuable and will therefore generate a profit or be successful for you, right? And of course, the discipline that you need. You need discipline as not only an entrepreneur, but also an athlete in order to succeed. I'm sure you've experienced that on both sides of the equation as well when talking to both entrepreneurs or executives and athletes.
Yeah. Discipline's a funny thing, you know, because where does discipline come from, right? Because if you ask most people about what they want to achieve in their life, most people want good things, right? They want good health. They want good relationships. They want to make good money. They want to do what they love. But then we look at the statistics of how the average person is actually living, and they're not being disciplined. So why aren't they? If they want it, then why aren't they? Are they just lazy? Do they not care as much? I don't actually think that's true. I think what it comes down to is, you know, the programming that they have. They may actually find that there's more pain on the other side of doing the actions, participating in the habits consistently, and getting to where they've never been, right, into the unknown, than to stay where they are. And so that's what people run into all the time is like, you know, I was working with this NFL player. He's a first round draft pick, and he had a lot of pressure with him, right? When a team takes you number one, the fan base has pressure they put on you, the coaches, the management, everyone is like, you need to be this. And for him, in his second year, he was beginning to sabotage himself. He wasn't putting in the work to actually live up to his potential because he was finding that it was more painful for him to get a bigger platform and get more attention because it would mean more criticism, more judgment, right? And so that's his governor turning on. And so for him, someone would have been like, why aren't you being more disciplined with your workouts? Why aren't you being more disciplined with watching film? Like, these are all the things he wasn't really doing like he needed to. And if you asked him rationally, he'd be like, well, I want to, I'm trying. But the truth was that he believed subconsciously there was more pain on the other side of getting this bigger platform and celebrity and getting even more judgment than it was to stay where he was. So that's how the subconscious is so tricky, where we have to understand, like, where does that discipline actually come from? And in my experiences, it comes from being aligned at the subconscious level.
Right. And that's where the second point of where I was reading these notes came into play. Quite frankly, a lot of what you had discussed or are presenting involves a team. So whether you have an organization, a company, you have a team to support you. And this is where I was asking specifically myself. I said, well, you know, thinking about it, yes, on one hand, the big boxers out there, the well-known, respected boxers, do have a team in terms of promoters, managers, nutritionists, therapists, and potentially even psychologists who help them prepare themselves to go between the ropes, enter that ring. But for the vast majority of boxers, it's a little thin in the area of team, as I've just described, as opposed to stepping onto the football field or a baseball diamond. You have a team there that you can rely on and support each other in earning that victory. Whereas in boxing and other very few but similar sports, you have to rely on yourself. You know, you're not just your skills and your training, but your belief in yourself in order to take you through those rounds and get you that victory you think you deserve. And so that's why I wanted to ask you, like, you know, what do you see as the fundamental difference there between someone who has to literally walk between those ropes on their own and face that opponent toe-to-toe, solely, alone?
Yeah. Well, I think that's why you hear so many fighters talk about how they say, you know, fighting is 90% mental. It's right. Because they're constantly going to war in a way with themselves to be like, am I going to get up and do this extra run in the morning? Am I going to study film? Am I going to work on my technique? Am I going to am I? Because, yeah, like the NFL teams, they have film sessions. You go in and do it, right? If you're a boxer, especially in the early days when you're coming up, like, you have to study the film by yourself. Like, right. Nobody's going to force you to do it. It's not a scheduled thing. There's no, like, organization. And so the individual has to make that choice. And like you said, they have to actually believe that they're worthy of that level of success to even to participate in those actions. And I think that's a big thing that separates the haves and the have-nots is, like, you know, as Mike Tyson always said, you have to be the champ before you become the champ. And without what that means is, like, you're embodying the identity of a champion. And so that means you're participating in all the actions that a champion would participate in. And then the byproduct is you go and you finally get your opportunity and you win a championship, but you've been the champion for a long time, even before they actually crown you.
Absolutely. Raises an interesting question, a bit of a sidebar I hadn't really thought of, but, you know, talking about the difference between those boxers who are enabled with a team to support them, getting up to that level of fight or that level of expertise anyway. What about the younger ones, the ones who don't have, say, the money or they just have to rely on themselves? They're coming off the street. Like you had mentioned, You know, basically, you went to the school of hard knocks before you finally begin to rise through the ranks. I mean, it's probably the same thing for those young boxers, both men and women, amateurs and professional. When they're just starting out, they've got, they think they have no one to help them get through. They might have a boxing coach, but do they really have a team? And the answer is no, they don't really have a team until they attain a certain level of success. So it must be incredibly difficult, I think, for boxers in particular to see that not only do they have to go through on a territorial basis, like locally, nationally, then internationally, then you have to fight the industry itself in terms of obtaining a manager, obtaining a promoter, someone who can put you in the ring against a quality opponent and provide you with that income that you rightfully deserve. What do you think the big difference is there between, say, boxing and other sports, or is it the same?
Yeah, I mean, you don't really get into boxing to make money, that's for sure.
You know, so I'm told.
Yeah, there's so few guys who actually are making a living through boxing. You know, that's a big difference. Is like, if you get some professional rankings in most other sports, like once you're a pro, even the individual sports, right, in tennis or golf, like once you get on the tour and you're a professional, then you're going to get paid. That's not the case in boxing, right? Like, we know that a lot of professional boxers are actually paying to fight earlier in their career. You know, right. They're actually spending more money. You know, they may have to spend a few thousand dollars out of pocket just to be able to get on a card so they can start to build their record. And so you definitely don't get into boxing to make money. It's a calling, right? It's a calling more than anything else. Like, you just feel it within you. You're like, this is me. I'm being called to this. And I think there are some cool things that are available now to boxers. Like, if they have the interest and creativity around it, like, you can build a brand as a boxer, right? And you can make money in ancillary ways around being a boxing coach. You know, obviously most boxers do a lot of like one-on-one personal training with clients on their way up. So it's very, very different from other sports. Like, you're not doing it. You don't just like make it, right? When you become professional, you don't make it. You're constantly, until you get to the level of like, you know, a lineal champion, you're constantly fighting to be there, to have a spot in that kind of like mainstream slot of boxing where people want to pay to see you fight, and it's all strictly business. So you're literally going to get paid whatever people value at, and has nothing to do a lot of times with your skill. You know, it does become by your skill, but especially in the beginning, it's not as much about skill as it's much about brand recognition and the name and the notoriety of who you are and people who actually want to see you fight. So that's a big difference. Other sports, you become professional, you're kind of taken care of. Boxing, don't get into this sport because you want to get rich, because very few do. And that's not a pessimistic thing. That's just like facts. It's just the facts around boxing. You could be top 10 in your division and still not able to make a living in boxing, which is crazy, but that's just the reality of it.
When I was growing up, I mean, boxing was incredibly popular. And I would have thought, you know, if you flash forward to today's technology, it would be equally as popular, if not more so, given the internet. Mm-hmm. You know, back in my day, we actually had to go to arenas. We had to go to gyms to see a fight and enjoy a fight. You know, I'm here in Toronto, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, 30 odd years ago, you know, Muhammad Ali was coming up to Maple Leaf Gardens to fight, you know, and realistically, you know, there was no other opportunity to see Muhammad Ali other than at the arena. So, you know, I thought it would have gotten more popular, quite frankly, boxing, that is, as a sport, as something that, you know, has been as, you know, I mean, men and women have fought each other for thousands of years. I'm sure it's, is it the first or the second oldest profession? But depends how you look at it. But at the end of the day, here we are with, you know, I think it's interesting between the struggle between, should I fight for the UFC? Should I continue my boxing career? And we've seen, you know, so-called influencers like Jake Paul balance that peculiar line of focus between building a brand, which he did, like it or not, And then entering the ring, like it or not, and facing fighters or non-fighters, you know, but nonetheless, he has developed a pretty big following for himself and has transitioned a lot of those fans into boxing fans. Mm-hmm. So I'll give him his credit for that, and also signing Amanda Serrano and developing a few other boxers along the way. But again, that goes to that essence of teamwork, and he has the money to put that behind his boxers. But many boxers don't have that opportunity. And like all sports, especially, for example, ice hockey here in Canada, you know, you've got this huge base of guys and gals who want to be professional hockey players and spend their, well, maybe their parents force them to, but spend their entire youth, if you will, being driven towards a professional career. And ultimately, they may not even believe in themselves, quite frankly, but their parents sure do, and pay for that belief. And ultimately, you know, they make it to a certain level, but realize, wow, the competition is simply too stiff. I'm not going to be able to make it. How do you suggest to these young men and women that they can make it, that they can break through that level of negativity, facing the competition that they see, that it's all around them?
Yeah, you know, I would take it to, you know, it could be perceived as an abstract place, but for me, I believe it's as real as it gets. And understanding that the journey you're on as an athlete is a spiritual journey. And so it goes far beyond what you're trying to achieve just physically, whether I make it, right? We've been programmed, speaking of programming, we're living in society that has all these programs, all these constructs that program us that like, we always have to be trying to make it. Right? What is the next milestone that I'm going to get to? Whether you're playing in youth and like, okay, I'm going to get into this team and then I'll make it, right? Or maybe I'll get to college and then I made it. And then I get to the pros, then I made it. Well, then I become an all-star, then I make it, right? There's all these different checkpoints of then I made it. So what I encourage anyone who is feeling the call to pursue sports, whether it's as a fighter or a hockey player, whatever it may be, is to understand that your sport is just an opportunity for you to find out who you are through this sport, you know? And I work with a lot of baseball players too, and I speak to them about it. I'm like, this is as spiritual as it gets, because like, if you're a pitcher, it's like every pitch is like, can you let the last pitch die and be reborn in the next one?
Right.
Right. So that's where I take it, is I just want these guys to relax, let go of what they want it the next milestone to be, and fully show up and enjoy what's right in front of them right now, because you don't know what the future is going to hold, but that's okay. You don't have to make it, right? If you're thoroughly enjoying whatever you're doing, whether it's a sparring session or a training session, if you're thoroughly enjoying it, you're winning the game of life. So surrender the need to hit the next milestone, because if you're enjoying the heck out of the process, you're going to get there wherever there is in your mind. But you actually only get there, but paradoxically, by being fully here, right? Taking right. every single rep and really nourishing it and treating it with the sacredness that it desires.
That's really good advice. I mean, especially from a macro level, for someone who can look back and say, wow, I can't believe I got this, or I achieved that, or I reached this milestone. That's great when you're looking back, but when you're looking forward, it is a little intimidating or a little daunting to say, why am I doing this? And what, you know, why am I here? And for those, you know, for those people who have to live in the moment, like the baseball player anticipating what that next pitch will achieve, either success or failure, depending on how you look at it. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking now of the boxer in the ring, and he's fighting in the moment. Yeah. And you know, we've seen many a boxer get knocked off stride, if you will, by a particular specific punch. I mean, we do talk about generalship, and we do talk about ring IQ, mm-hmm. and we do talk about these things. But in the moment when you're delivering or having to defend yourself in the ring, it is a bit different than any other sport, potentially not UFC, but when in the combat ring sports. You know, you have to really not just enjoy that moment, be focused on because your game plan, what Mike Tyson also say?
Yeah.
It's until you get hit in the face.
Everybody has a plan until you get punched in the face.
Yeah. Right. So there you go. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, who knows better than him, who ironically will be fighting Jake Paul soon. But anyway.
Well, let me speak to that rabbit hole that you're beginning to go down there. I wanted to pick something up from where you're just going before we end that. Where were you just planning to go with that?
So there's this macro level of looking back at your successes and saying that this sport was great for me and it helped me achieve this.
Okay.
It helped me put me where I am today type thing. But then there's the micro level of being actually in the sport, actually in the ring, actually having to duck, bob, weave, whatever, land that punch, and all of a sudden you're knocked off stride.
So let me come in here and say that there is an aspect of mental preparation, though, right? So that's part of what these fighters can do to be able to fully own those moments. I have some meditations up on YouTube that are free for anyone who wants to watch them. They can just search my name, Brandon Epstein Boxing, and they'll find them. And part of being prepared for those moments when you get caught off, when you get caught, because it happens sometimes, right? Sometimes you don't see the punch coming, is you actually go through this mental preparation of dropping your brain waves down and getting into a meditative state where your brain can't really tell the difference whether you're fighting or if you're in a meditation. That's what happens when you slow your brain waves down enough. And again, Tyson is someone we can speak about so much because that's what Custy and Motto used to do with him. He used to put him into hypnosis, which is essentially just slowing down the brainwaves so you can accept thought and different visualizations. And so you can do that for yourself, and you can actually watch yourself, experience yourself getting caught with the punch that you don't see coming, and then experience yourself overcoming that moment of adversity. And it's actually really good for your subconscious to go through this experience many times of encountering something it didn't expect, or running into adversity, getting to that uncomfortable position, feeling like, wait a minute, this fight might be over for me, and then being able to go through the mental rehearsal of finding a way by any means necessary to overcome that. And so the mental rehearsal of that can be really productive for all fighters, just so they feel like they've been there before if their back ever, you know, gets up against the ropes. Additionally, uncovering what their greatest fears are. You know, a lot of times fighters try to be such tough guys. They want to say, I don't have fears, but the truth is they all do, because it's a biological reflex to feel fear. And so identifying, well, what are you believing to be true that's making you feel afraid? And a lot of times you find like, oh, well, I'm afraid of getting knocked out, right? Embarrassed, humiliated in front of people, the world. Right. And then actually in this visualization, going through the acceptance of it and actually dying and having an ego death of like, okay, if that happens, let's go all the way through it though. Let's go to that worst case scenario of like, it happens. And I go to that place. And by doing that, you actually just release the energy around it, because what you resist persists. And it's like, okay, that's a possibility. And you let it go. And it brings you to a state of being able to just fight freely and from this liberated place, knowing that even the worst case scenario, it's okay.
You mean as you're lying unconscious on the floor? Is that what you're saying? It's okay.
Yeah.
I'm in the right place.
I mean,
I shouldn't be laughing. I'm not laughing.
A lot of guys go through that, right? And that's it. But you have to go through the ego death, because the unknown is scarier than actually getting knocked out for guys. It's the unknown of like, well, what is that going to mean? And to be able to actually go through this experience of having that happen and come out the other side and being like, wait, okay, I survived and it's okay. Even if it may have been something traumatic I had to go through, it's going to be okay. Versus the unknown for everyone, fighters and everyone in general, people are usually way more afraid and paralyzed by the fear of the unknown than even the worst case scenario playing itself out.
Exactly. And if you take that one step further, for those boxers who are lucky enough to have the managers, the promoters, the matchmaking teams, all those professionals on board, then you get in that peculiar situation in boxing where boxers are being protected, especially in the loss column. So they go up to like 20-0 within a few years of being professionally managed. So they are tremendously afraid of losing that zero. And if they do, they have to be mentally prepared for that moment. And quite frankly, the boxers that we've spoken to here on Talk and Fight, they do have pretty big egos. They do go into the ring thinking, well, they have to think they're going to win. But if they lose, we call it a learning lesson, not a loss. But the point of the matter is they have to be able to deal with it. And not many of the young fighters have the luxury of either a sports psychologist or someone like yourself, a mental performance coach, who can say to them, hey, listen, it's okay. You know, it's where you're meant to be right now. Mm-hmm. And let's just continue down this path. That's what you so choose. You know, it'd be interesting to see, like, as the sport expands, hopefully it does, but it expands in the areas that it hasn't expanded before, such as your area. And this is what I found intriguing about what you're saying in your book and what you've been talking about, you know, in terms of that mental approach to sports, mental approach, even, you know, when we compete in the business world, we compete for the very same reasons. And a lot of us, especially the young entrepreneurs, especially, really need that, not persuasion, but belief in themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for them to argue that they need to go into a meditative state in order to succeed, but the ability to reflect on what has happened is critical to the success they need to achieve moving forward, I think.
Absolutely. And what you can't accept won't change. And so whether you had a sparring day where, like, you got your ass kicked and you just try to compartmentalize and be like, no, that, like, if you don't accept that, you're not going to improve and actually do what's necessary to become the fighter who's not going to have that happen again. And then you're going to get exposed. And the same thing in the pro level, like, we've seen, there's been fighters that have believed that they were invincible. And then once they do lose and then their O disappears, they can't handle it. They just collapse completely mentally. And their career might just end after that. And they start to go downhill because once that part of their mind was broken of, like, wait a minute, I'm not invincible. And they weren't willing to accept the fact that they lost. It just puts them in conflict with the reality versus their identity. And so in those moments, when you do lose, whether it's in sparring or in a professional fight, you have to accept it. Because through the acceptance, you get to release it and you get to surrender into the past and then go, okay, like you said, how do I learn from this experience and get better? But if you don't accept it, it's going to keep you in inner turmoil and conflict. And it doesn't matter if you tell anyone, oh, well, it's because of this, this, and this. You make excuses. You know the truth, and you will be exposed.
Which brings me to Shane Mosley. You know, you use him as an example, quite frankly. So how did you turn him around? Like, he was on a, I'm not going to say a losing streak, but it seemed like he didn't believe in himself anymore. And you were able to do something with him to get him back into the win column.
Yeah, 100%. No, he was losing fights that he shouldn't have lost before he started working with me. And he's been undefeated since I started working with him. I believe it was four fights ago, starting with Gabriel Rosado. So yeah, I think it was his last four fights. And for Shane, it was the same thing as everyone, but it's not unique to him, but it is unique to him because he's a unique dude. But I would tell you that if I were to show you my coaching notes across sports, like, it's pretty similar. Most people are encountering very similar things. And so Shane just was lacking the belief of being worthy of being seen in that way. Because, and I'm sure he'll talk about this more openly at some point, especially as his platform continues to grow and hopefully as he does win a world title this year. Like, nobody wanted him to fight. You know, his dad was a Hall of Famer, and even, you know, very close family members, like, were telling him, like, don't fight, and putting him down. And when I met Shane, he was like, you think Shane, like, got a bunch of money from his dad? Shane was living on his boxing coach's couch when I met him.
Wow.
Like, he got gifted the opportunity to be around boxing, which was incredible. You know, growing up around Hall of Famers, like, he was exposed to a lot of really cool things boxing wise, but he by no means got any of those, like, financial gifts for him. You know, nobody like said, here's boxing, here's a boxing career on a silver platter. Like, he had to fight and scratch and claw for everything. And so just the experience of growing up where you're being told not to do something that you're feeling pulled towards will ingrain and program within you, especially at a young age when you're hearing this, that I'm not worthy of this, right? And so we had to go down through and put him in the hypnotic state and go through that whole reprogramming process of having him fully accept that he isn't worthy, so he could release it, surrender that story into the past, and then step into, I am worthy, I am enough, I do deserve this, I am a champion. And, you know, I think of these as like broken pieces of code. And he had a lot of broken pieces of code that I had to reprogram with him, which it's not unique to him, like a lot of people do. But that was a process. And as we continued to reprogram every piece of code that was working against him, we finally got him to a place of just equanimity, where he could actually just show up and be the fighter that he actually was, because everyone knew that the guy they saw in sparring oftentimes was not the guy that he was showing up in the professional fights and in those rings. And so it's like, well, what's the disconnect here? Well, it's because the governor turns on. When the pressure gets to a certain level, he would collapse because his sense of identity didn't align with where he was about to go if he won that fight. Right. So we had to build him up and program him into the identity of a world champion. So I can definitely say, in this moment, he is a world champion and he's living in that identity and he has that swagger and he has that deep knowing. And now it's just a matter of him getting the fight to become the world champion.
When you're talking to someone like that, are you able to clarify for them and explain for them the difference between the conscious and the level of processing ability on a conscious level and almost the infinite capability of the subconscious?
I'll be honest, most of my clients have no idea what I'm actually doing. You know, it's basically magic to them. And that's great. That's great. And it's funny because like one of my fighters from UFC, Sean Brady, went on Joe Rogan and he talked about the work that we did. And he's just like, yeah, we did visualization. And it's like, visualization is just like the tip of the iceberg. It's the 1% of the work that I really do. Right. And that's good that for him and my fighters and got people who work with me, it feels automatic. It's almost hard for them to remember that life was any different. And so the reason it works this way is because we are working at the subconscious level, which is beneath the conscious surface. So I am bringing them into almost a hypnotic state. And so I don't need to necessarily have them understand rationally the aspect of like, hey, we're working at the supercomputer level right here. Like we are reprogramming you from beneath the surface. So when you get back to being consciously aware again, you're not even going to be aware of the programs that were changed within you, but the results will speak for themselves. And the results are, you're going to feel confident. You're going to feel present. You're going to feel powerful. You're going to feel like you deserve whatever it is you're going towards. And you're actually going to participate in the habits and the rituals necessary to get there. Because like I said, people say they want a lot of things, but if you're not wired for it beneath the surface, you're not going to do it. And I can give you all the information in the world, right? Like all the information's out there, right? For a lot of things. You ask someone, okay, how do I get out of debt? Well, you stop spending more money than you're making, right?
Right.
You tell someone this, but subconsciously, if they have messed up beliefs around money, like they'll keep repeating the same mistakes over and over again, right? You tell someone, hey, you want to lose weight, eat in a slight calorie deficit, track your food and make sure you're doing it, right? You can't beat that, right? That's just proven. And if it weren't, then, well, you would starve to death, right? If that's just the science of how these things work. And so, but why don't people participate in that? It's all happening beneath the subconscious surface. And so, to answer your question in a very long-winded way, like a lot of them don't understand what's actually happening, but they feel the benefits, they feel the results, and that's all they care about. You know, and they keep coming back to tap into that. And to, again, I love Tyson, especially Tyson after the Bufo Toad, if you remember him doing that. You know, he talks about being touched by God, right?
Right.
He's talked about that quite a bit. He talked about fighters who've been touched by God. And we know when they have been, right? You see them, they're just unbeatable. And you know they've been touched by God. And when you're touched by God, for me, that means that you're just channeling pure presence, There's no thinking, there's no thought, there just is. And so once your programs subconsciously succeed, it just is. It's self-evident.
You actually mentioned, I don't know if you mentioned this in your book or not, but did you actually lick the toad?
I did smoke the toad. Yeah, I did. Yeah, highly recommend it. 15 minutes for the rest of your life will never be the same.
That's quite a story. I mean, you know, we sit here, again, one of these things of looking back and saying, wow, I can't believe I did that, but I'm glad I did that because otherwise this would not have happened. You know, and we talk to so many boxers who have so many aspirations, dreams, goals, and they are pushed along, they are supported, but somewhere along the way, they must realize that they're not going to, okay, how do I say this politely? Not that they're not going to succeed, they're going to succeed, but they're going to succeed to a certain level. Yeah. You know, and it's hard for a young boxer to accept that as reality, but mm-hmm. there's going to be a point where they're going to have to retire. And very recently, actually, down in Australia, a good young fighter, you know, got beaten and was very upset after the fight and said, that's it. I quit. I retire. The sport's corrupt. I hate it. You know, like he just lost his mind. Well, for a brief moment, lost his mind. You know, and that was his ego talking, you know, that he couldn't accept the fact that he actually lost that fight. So, I mean, it does happen on a professional level, on a top rank level. And also, I think it happens to a lot of young boxers who just don't have the skills or the team to support them moving through those ranks.
Yeah. Yeah. And which circles it back to like understanding the bigger game you're playing.
Right.
The bigger game, the spiritual game. And I don't see spiritual as it relates to any religion either. I say spiritual as in understanding like there's a becoming happening as you're striving in your boxing career. There's a becoming happening. You're becoming someone, right? Like all the skills you're learning in boxing are translatable to the rest of your life. You know, how to be right. consistent, how to build good habits, how to have good health routines, how to study, how to, you know, look at your mistakes and improve from them. Like all these things are universal skills that you can use in life. So understand that aspect. That's what I would tell anyone, because you'll be able to apply that to different areas. Like I've seen it, professional athletes I've worked with, they're retired and like they're just killers. You know what I mean? Like if they're able to get past the ego aspect of, okay, I'm not going to be one of the top people in my sport anymore, they can drag and drop that way of being into whatever they want and be successful.
That's right. That's right. And that is something, quite frankly, that is hard to teach. It's hard to teach someone at a young age, someone who's just starting out on their career, that your path may go this way and you have to expect that things are going to change for you. You know, and that's why I was interested to hear about how you treated athletes and or business people differently, or whether you did, or whether we're all treatable in that same way.
All the same.
Yeah.
It's all the same. Yeah. Because we're working at the human level. And, you know, in the same way, we probably see different business leaders that have been touched by God in that way as well, right? Where it's just like, wow, this person cannot do wrong. Like they're just continuing to be successful. Every business they seem to touch, it's like, why is it so easy for them? And there is a flow state that you can get into, whether it's in business or sport or art, you know, and we see musicians, right, who have this run. They're like, they have 6 years of putting out these amazing songs and they spend the next 50 years touring around the world, you know, right. those same songs from that 6 year period. So it's like, that's what everyone's trying to get to. We're all trying to channel that within ourselves. And we have to remember that it does all live within ourselves. And whenever we're looking for the answers out there, I always tell my guys, like, it's all in here. Like
yes. Just
flip it around, go back inside yourself. You're going to uncover whatever you think you're looking for that you're lacking inside. It's in there. Go back inside.
So just as we wind out here, what was that one moment then in your life that changed it all for you, that, you know, transformed you from, say, heading in this direction to all of a sudden you hit a fork in the road and now you're going down this path? What was that one moment for you?
Man, I would have to say there's probably a few. If I think of like big life-changing things in my life, was definitely, it was always through the adversity, right? That's where the opportunities come. So like the first one was my freshman year playing college football, riding the bench, being super frustrated, wanting to get on the field. And that sent me down the path of seeking solutions. And that brought me into this whole world of mental training and meditation and mental performance and brainwave training, hypnosis and neuro-linguistic programming. And I learned everything. And I found like my life's path essentially through my failure of not getting the field. And I came back the next season, I started and I dominated. And I was like, wow, this is the thing, right? You learn something, you apply it in your own life, it works. And then you want to go tell everyone else about it. And that's what I did there. So that was a big one. And then trying to actually make a successful career out of this, because I learned all the magic outside of the university setting. And even though I created my own degree, the mental aspect of human performance, where I basically had to defend it in front of a panel of professors and tell them, hey, this is what I want to do with my life. You guys don't offer this, but this is it, the mental aspect of human performance. So I created my own degree. There wasn't the classes in university that would actually teach me what I needed to help my clients. So I ended it after undergrad. I was done. And I was like, yeah, most people in my field go get a master's degree. They go get doctorate degrees. Right. But I was like, why am I going to go back there to get the information where I haven't gotten any information there? I'm getting it all outside of the classroom, right, through seminars, through mentors, through coaches, through books, through other actually actionable experiences. And so my first 5 years of trying to make a career out of this in mental performance was a really big struggle. I ended up getting into tens of thousands of dollars of debt as I tried to find my path and try to find it through entrepreneurship. And that was another one of those moments of like, okay, another ego death of like, I want to do this, but I had to actually kind of put these dreams on the shelf for a little bit while I built another business to be able to come back to this like I have, from a place of freedom and liberation and not needing the money and having to squeeze it so tight. And so that's what I did. And I built a $1 million business, built a big community in the fitness space, and then was able to sell that business and come back here full time and do the mental performance stuff. And I would say the third event that happened around 5 years ago was smoking the Bufo Olivares toad, the same one that Mike Tyson smoked, because that was my first true ego death, right? Like having to go bankrupt in a company, or, you know, not being a bench player in football, that's an ego death, but it's not a real ego death, right? Having to go bankrupt, that's ego death, but it's not a real ego death. Smoking the Bufo toad is a true ego death, where basically what happens is you're sent outside of your identity of who I am. This is mom and dad. They made me. This is my life. And it was a real hard reset where I got to zoom out and see every bit of programming that made me me. And then I got to make the decision, what parts of these programs do I want to keep with me? And which ones do I want to leave behind? And that eventually led to the book, because it gave me a really nice framework for how I can work with my athletes, my high performers, and helping them reprogram themselves, just like I did. So I would say it was like those three big inflection points so far in my life, around 18, around 25, and I guess it was, 18, 25, and 29. So, you know, I'm probably due for one another couple of years.
Yeah, that's a great segue as we conclude here. So what was it like then to put all these experiences down on paper, create a book, pitch the book, get that book published? I mean, that must be a heck of a daunting task as well. Well, process, not just a task. I mean, how did you face that? I mean, you knew that could just flop, or it could be immensely successful. I mean, how'd you?
Yeah, I mean, I really approach it from the long game. I was like, let me tell the story up until this point in a way that I think that anyone would enjoy reading it, you know, because I'm just your average dude. And I spoke from that voice of just being a relatable person. And then I wanted to have the playbook, because there are a lot of people now that don't get to work with me just because of how much I charge my one-on-one sessions.
Right.
And so for me, it was less about like, will this be successful or not? Like, the book being completed is successful because now I have the book to hand out. Oh, you want to work with me, but you don't have the money. Here's the book. Here's my playbook. You can use it. So getting it done for me was a success. And now it's out there. And so for whatever happens, the book, you know, obviously I'm here on your show talking about the book because I'm passionate about it. I think it's going to help a lot of people. But for me, it really was a success. And even the process of writing it, extremely cathartic, you know, just to reflect back on your life. For me, the book is already a massive success. And, you know, if it becomes a New York Times bestseller and achieves all those other check marks, that's cool. And all those milestones. But for me, man, I'm just so happy about what I created and I feel good about that.
Yeah, that's awesome. I dropped a link into the YouTube description down below to your website, thebrandonepstein.com, I believe, simply.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. And, you know, it has a wealth of information, quite frankly, that's available, and it directs people to all your appropriate and different resources on social media and or the book. So all good stuff, really good stuff. It was great talking to you, Brandon. I really appreciate you joining me on my show. And I think you've given a heck of a lot of advice and a lot of your expertise to the fans out there who are listening to this right now and those who will join us later on and listen in and not have the opportunity to chat with us. But thanks very much again for joining me. I appreciate it. And enjoy your path.
Thank you, Graham. Appreciate you.
As well. All right, sports fans, that brings us to an end of our show. Thank you very much for joining me. Appreciate it very much. Remember to like, share, subscribe, hit that notification bell, and we'll see you later on Talkin'Fight.com.